Hey, why am I his sidekick, all right? How do you know he's not my sidekick?
Welcome to Fireside. First off, welcome to Fireside. When we talking comic books the entire time. Ain't going nowhere, so dry your eyes. Already lasted longer than Firefly.
Stay tuned, Mitty's got the grooviest news.
From books to TV, even movie reviews.
Plus the next toy, baby, here will you choose.
Even the superhero fight club will we usually lose.
So popping those earbuds, turn up those speakers.
Feel Mama's power, Earth 2 with features.
And either listen by weekly or you can binge us.
We got it all, baby.
Are there ninjas?
So relax and lie back as we start another issue of Fireside Chats. Comic facts and wise cracks. Welcome to the show, this is Fireside Chats.
Hello, welcome to another issue of Fireside Chats. I'm your host, Menti, and with me as always are my wonderful sidekicks. First, Mashko.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can. How lucky are you?
Well, we were talking about some things before we started, and yeah, I'm trying to hold that back.
You still threw that in like an 80s ad-lib.
That was my Nick Cage.
check out my melody.
Ooh, that's a good reference.
And then there's Huey.
Hoo-hoo.
What?
No. What's going on? I was going to try to do ha-ha, hee-hee.
What was that, Owlman? That was, I could not have been more derailed from that. Like that, everything I was going to say, he then starts hooting like an owl and you lost me. I'm out. That wasn't a sound effect, ladies and gentlemen. That was Baby Huey.
And what was awesome.
Blur, punch buggy.
Sorry, I'll stop. I will stop.
Well, I didn't see your like face moving and those sounds were coming out and I knew it wasn't Menti.
Well, that was super weird.
I will stop.
All right. Well, welcome to the Thursday show?
Monday, Tuesday.
So we're doing something different this week. We're doing three shows, and I believe this is the Thursday show. It might be Wednesday, but more than likely this is the Thursday show.
I guess this is on a day during the week.
Time will tell when this show goes up, but most likely it's Thursday, so happy Thursday. I hope you got all the books from your pull list. All right. So today we have to talk about... I'm going to say it once incorrectly first, and then we'll correct it. So we're going to talk about Shang-Chi, seeing as how we've been mispronouncing it my entire life. So bear with me, because I guarantee you I make that mistake again, but feel free to keep fixing me as we go through this episode. With Shang-Chi coming out, how could we talk about anything else? It earned a Thursday spot. That's what we'll say. It earned its own spot in the week.
It earned its own show. Or not.
So yeah,
and yeah, keep going.
Well,
it did,
but on a new day. See, there it is. So let's, as we always do, and I'm sure we did this on the news show yesterday, or maybe we didn't do a news show yesterday, and this is today. I don't know, but let's do a quick little round robin, spoiler free review for anybody who hasn't had a chance to see it yet, like Maurer, who's not on the show, and that's why. So for anybody who hasn't seen the show, quick round robin, spoiler free, and then we'll get into it. Mr. Huey, I'm intrigued. What did you think, sir?
Overall, I thought the story was actually solid. The choreograph was beautifully done. Awkwafina was awesome. And to me, the special effects overall were actually pretty well done. Nothing like Black Panther that took me out of it. So, and the mid-credit scene got me hyped for the future.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you brought that up. Let's save like 10 minutes at the end for the mid credit and what that could potentially mean, because there's a lot of crazy rumors I'm seeing with that. So let's save a little bit of time at the end there. What'd you think, Mashko?
I was waiting for Captain something.
Me on the spot.
Nah, that's fine. So I forgot I was watching a Marvel movie, which was fantastic.
Wow.
I love the fact that it felt that way. We'll get into that more. My biggest takeaway is that this film didn't rely on previous Marvel canon. That's what allowed me just to watch this for what it was. That's what allowed me to not think about everything else that was going on and just focus on this one story. And the story was really, really good, well thought out, well executed. There are a couple of things in it that are a little iffy.
Yeah, but it's nitpicky.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And we'll pick some nits later.
Captain Nitpick. There you go.
No, that's Maurer.
There you go. That's true. That's Maurer.
That's his alter ego.
So then maybe you're Sergeant Picknit.
I don't know.
Okay. No. All right. I tried. I was put on the spot. This is what you got for me when I'm put on the spot.
It's true. But yeah, that's kind of the summation of this film. Really, really liked it. The near the end, it got a little squirrely for me. But we'll talk about that soon. But I liked it. It was refreshing, and it was much better than Black Widow if we're talking current stuff.
100, yeah, completely better. I mean, I know there were some people who still swear by Black Widow, and Black Widow had an interesting little cameo in there. But regardless, I do think this was a better movie than Black Widow. I think this is, I mean, I would go as far as to say top 10 MCU movies. I don't know where it quite falls on my list, but it's definitely in the upper half, if not definitely top 10. Maybe even closer to top 5. I don't know. It's really good. Ooh, wow. I know that's hard to say. It's hard to say, but it was a really good movie. I was concerned going into this movie because, I mean, as we know, Shang-Chi's comic counterpart doesn't have a lot to go off of as far as the comics, and he's really never been this major player. So seeing where they were going to take this, I knew there was going to be a lot of liberties taken. And it made me fearful with the way that the MCU is kind of moving forward with making certain changes to certain characters. Like, for example, Kamala Khan now having that glowy purple fist and potentially not, I mean, again, all rumors, but potentially not stretching, like taking some pretty big liberties with characters. This was a way that they did it that makes me excited for what could come, because they took a character that really doesn't have but so much to go off of and added a lot of interesting lore that still ties back into the comics canon, which I thought was incredible. Like, they grabbed aspects of Marvel Comics and then tied it into Shang-Chi in a beautiful way to give him this rich backstory that didn't really exist before. Like, I'll stop from the spoiler stuff. But, you know, I've said this before where Doctor Strange just pretty much felt like Iron Man mixed with Harry Potter. This is kind of like Iron Man because it still has that Marvel shine to it, but Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It very much has that. And that was an inspiration of the movie, so you can see it. I mean, a lot of not only Crouching Tiger, but then you could also see a lot of Jackie Chan, which was also apparently an inspiration for the fight scenes. So the choreography...
The choreographer is actually, or the coordinator, they like to be called. They did work with Jackie Chan in the past.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense.
The bamboo scene was a nod to Rush Hour. Bamboo not breaking. The bamboo won't break, right? Like, the line was like ripped from Rush Hour.
And all of the fight scenes alone made this movie what it was, regardless of the CGI third act. I mean, you could cut that whole third act out and the fight scenes alone made this movie great. Yep. Now, I did not have a problem with the CGI final bit. I know I can see why some will. but in general, I thought the character development to the Mandarin was outstanding. I thought Wenwu was great. Not only was the acting good, but the complexity of the character was great, especially for Marvel being known for having kind of subpar villains. I add Wenwu up there with Killmonger or with Thanos even. I mean, more complex. I mean, I guess, is that it? Purple Man. I mean, I guess if you want to add the Netflix movie shows. But Marvel movies.
Loki's complex.
Yeah, but Loki's touting that.
He also
that
had a lot
anti-hero.
Of time, too.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Not as much in the beginning.
True.
But all right, let's get into the spoiler stuff, because this is where I think is the most incredible part of it was how they took not only Chinese lore, Chinese, I guess, how would you say it?
I was thinking on the line of mythology, but
yeah,
mythology. Don't know if I'm entirely right on that one.
That might not be the wrong. Term. That might be the wrong word. But at least you get the point I'm trying to make. There's definitely mythology or lore, but how they connected it with Ta Lo, which is pulled from Thor comics. I mean, that was in what, Thor 300 or three something. That is a realm where the Chinese gods live, and a lot of the gods live in their own little realms, and they even meet up, like all fathers meet up together. But the fact that they grabbed that snippet and tied it into to Shang-Chi the way they did, or excuse me, Shang-Chi the way they did, I thought was incredible. I thought a movie with this character could not be done well without adding more MCU into it, because he doesn't really have much of a backstory. But all of the things that make a Shang-Chi comic, or at least made back when Fu Manchu was the main villain, like back in the day, were all still there. The assassination, the successful assassination when he was a child that pushed him to want to leave the Ten Rings. That was all in there. It was more of a throwaway in the comics, but it was still, they still made it a prevalent part. Like, it was pretty cool to see how it was still, it still towed the line of comic accuracy and that MCU touch that they give certain characters to make them relevant when they weren't before.
Mm-hmm. You were right. Thor, it was Thor 301.
301?
Yeah.
It was The Great Canopy of Heaven, I believe, was the was one of the titles of Tao Lo. Anyway, point being is that was, it's another dimension where you know, the mythology of Chinese lore. I guess we're just throwing this word around regardless. but that's where you would find it, which to me, that was brilliant and gives me hope for what we could see from the MCU moving forward. Mm-hmm. The only thing that bothered me to no end was Death Dealer. Death Dealer is the Boba Fett of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He looks awesome. I was really stoked for what we could get from him, and then nothing. We got one cool scene and nothing. He got Sarlacc'd.
He got Taskmastered.
No! Even no. Taskmaster had more than he did.
That's a good point. And that's,
he showed
like,
up at...
I was seeing the whole, you know, the costume, the uniform, whatever, with all the, you know, the purple, or I'm sorry, the orange, and then the blue kind of accents and the white. And I'm like, I'm thinking for a minute, is there a tie there? And then I knew who actually Death Dealer was ahead of time anyway. But yeah, that nothing, man. I mean, well, awesome battles, but...
One really great fight scene, but to be fair, I mean, Death Dealer also like comes and goes pretty fast in the comics. It's a Shang-Chi's buddy who also dies pretty quick. So it's not like it's not warranted what happened to Death Dealer,
yeah.
But it just felt so, that character just felt like a painting. Like, it was just something there that was kind of cool for you to look at when you weren't paying attention to what was actually happening on the screen. Like, nothing nothing serious was going on with that character, which bothered me a bit. But besides that.
Mm-hmm. I like the simple fact of how it just started. You know, you were immediately in there with Sean, as he was Sean and Katie right off the bat, with him getting dressed, and then you see the fancy car, and turns out he's just the valet there, and then they take off. The fact that they didn't like start off with his quote unquote origin, which we later get to see, was really cool, and the fact that he was already proficient and a killing machine. Well before we even, saw how he got that way. That was all really phenomenal. And the bus scene, forget about it. Forget about it.
You know, that bus scene apparently is how they pitched the movie. Specific scene?
Mm-hmm.
It's the only thing from the original pitch that made it into the movie, I believe.
So it's Deadpool.
Kind of, except for the highway.
Right,
kind of.
Well, highway scene got the Deadpool movie. The bus got the movie.
You know, we've been talking about close quarters combat, so we brought it up a week or two ago. I forget what the show was. Oh no, we were talking about Suicide Squad with Harley with the hallway scene, as she's kind of battling everybody, and then we referenced back to Daredevil on Netflix. That scene, him and the bus.
Oh,
pretty darn good. I almost want to say it's the second best fight scene that I've seen in the last year, where, and we were talking about him earlier, Bob Odenkirk in Nobody. He fights a whole bunch of guys in the bus.
Oh, yes.
That was awesome, too.
I was kind of just hoping that you had a story from like last week.
Yeah.
I saw you would never believe what I saw on my way home.
During the flood.
He holds up his camera and he's like, I got a little bit of fight history. I'm going to try and try to judge this fight as it's going on behind me.
And that's the thing with the bus. I mean, you will see some dude pull out his phone and live stream a fight. Like you just see it. And it was very relatable for this point in time.
I really wish you would have added that with, all right, now do a flip.
Got it.
Would have been great.
Okay. Send your donations my way. It's at, he wasn't promoting himself well on that live stream.
No, he was not at all. So the fight scenes we know were outstanding. The villain was outstanding. The cinematography was great. The choreography was great. What didn't you like?
That I had to read a lot more than I thought I was going to have to.
Oh, admit those things before and after the show, Huey, not when we're recording. That I had to read. All right. Well, other than Huey's illiteracy, what do you got?
I'll tell you what. A friend of mine texted me, it might have been Saturday or Friday or whatever, asking me about the movie and saying, you know, are there subtitles? And which is funny because I remember talking to Maurer saying, I will not watch anything with subtitles. I want it all, you know, right there in front of my face, whatever.
Me reading subtitles, I'm focusing on the words. I'm not paying attention to the picture, so I feel like I'm missing stuff. That's why I don't like subtitles. But
there were enough to allow you to get into that mode of reading and watching at the same time. I know sometimes when it's just a few things, you miss it. But when you're watching it over and over, it's much easier to kind of hone in on it and get everything. Because generally, you could read a lot faster than everybody is that's talking in general.
I got into a lot of like Korean and Asian horror in college. Mm-hmm. So there was a time in my life where I was reading a lot of subtitles, so that didn't bother me at all.
One thing, and I guess we'll probably move on. I did see this in, I was telling you guys earlier, the RPX 4D. That's where, like, you know, you get water sprayed all over you. The seats move all over the place. It feels like you're part of the battle.
Sounds like a wild Saturday night.
Yeah, I think that's how I saw Endgame, if I remember correctly. It was, you did, you know, it's enjoyable.
You said with Hawkeye scene.
With the subtitles, they did pump smoke into it, and they pumped the smoke in from the bottom up. So in some of those scenes, you actually couldn't see what was on the screen.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
I didn't think they needed the smoke, but everything else was kind of cool.
That's it? You just didn't like the fact that there were subtitles?
Honestly?
That was the thing you didn't like? That was it? That was it? That's your only complaint?
Gripe with the movie? I really enjoyed this movie. There's really no, aside from Death Dealer being a, you know,
a waste.
A waste throwaway Dude, character.
And you had Razor Fist of all throwaway villains, like the most throwaway villain of throwaway villains who looks stupid. When you have the coolest looking character that you could have just swapped him out. Just a little swippity swap.
I completely agree. That's my only real gripe.
Yeah, his name is, it's Florian M. something or another. He fought under, I believe, UFC as Kenny Florian. So he was kind of doing that for a while. You said the most throwaway villain. So what I would challenge is, or what I would actually want to see is a Razor Fist, Taser Face collaboration. That would have been a cool Disney Plus show.
How great that they never said his name. How great that you only know his name because of the car. The only reason you know his name is because of the car they stole.
They didn't say Death Dealer's name, did they?
Because he was never in it. He's in it for like, he's in four scenes and then dies.
He hit me with a whip.
He hit me.
When he was younger. Like, that's his backstory.
All right, so let's talk about for a second the Wenwu's downfall, we'll say. So Wenwu's character, I thought, had an outstanding arc where he gets the rings, where they kind of tease that they came from. Didn't they say they came from a crater or something? Mm-hmm. They were found in a crater.
They
which
don't
is
know
similar
exactly
to the comics.
Well, so they said either a crater or a tomb, and the tomb is where it was in the comics.
Right. So similar enough, and we'll talk about that later, but. He gets the rings. He becomes the conqueror. He meets his wife. He gives up the rings to lead a normal life. She dies. He freaks. He picks up the rings. And he's then corrupted by the rings due to the Dweller in Darkness talking to him. So that was the hardest part for me to get behind, was because I'm like, I feel like he could be reasoned with. Like, I've seen
this story before.
Oh?
Vader?
Oh.
Luke?
Oh.
Wait, what? Yeah.
How?
So Luke is this, number one, the obvious. So Luke is Vader's son, right? He needs to...
Spoiler alert, jeez.
It's only 40 years late. He needs to battle his father to take away his power. He's doing it. The mother is involved in there somewhere. She died. He went crazy. It's there.
I get what you're saying. The only thing I would argue with is that Luke relies on the neutral mask, which is a writing idea that the main character is not given a pretty extensive backstory, and they're the chosen one, quote unquote, so that way you can vicariously live through them, and then they're surrounded with more interesting characters. I didn't see that with Shang-Chi. First off, he's not a chosen one character. He's not chosen. What was who chose him? He just happened to be born. Like, he's not answering some, you know, prophecy.
Well, he was from day one trained as the chosen one in the family.
I don't think that was
1,000-year-old,
That's not true. It wasn't only until the wife died. Once his mother died, then he started getting trained that way. The death of his mother, which is such an important aspect of the movie, because at least to me, the bread and butter of this movie was balance, was the concept of the movie was balance, right? And I thought that was such a big scene when she opens up Shang-Chi's hand to make a palm instead of a fist, because the only way that you could combat Wen Wu was with defense, right? Mm-hmm. You can't come at him with strength, because that doesn't work. You have to use strength against him. And the balance between his mother's grace and his father's strength is what made Shang-Chi the ability to even wake up the protector, the dragon. Go ahead.
His fighting style is how the story went. So he was, the way he fought was how he was trained by his father. And then, you know, he then later learned that he needed another way, because this wasn't going to work. And then he learned kind of the style of his mother through his aunt. And then combine the two, which allowed him to kind of, you know, overcome everything.
And steal the rings. I mean, yes. And I guess at this point we might as well start talking about that end credit scene, unless somebody's got something they want to mention.
We need to talk about the end of the movie.
So I was doing a little bit of research on the rings, and yeah, they changed color from when Wu had them to when Shang-Chi had them. And in Chinese color theory, yellow is seen as a central color and it's associated with power and the yin and the yang, which is everything you just basically said that he has. So that's why they kind of changed from the blue, and the blue is perceived as immortality and longevity, which is what he had because he had been around for forever. So the colors were perfect.
I think each of those rings is going to change color.
I think they're going to be possessed by other people at some point, and not all at the same time.
I think each one of those rings still represents the rings that we know from the comics. We just haven't seen that yet. I think one will control lightning, one will fire, one will give everlasting life. I mean, I think the rings that the Mandarin finds in the cavern that all have unique individual abilities, I think Wen Wu never really unlocked their full potential. And I think Shang-Chi will start to realize that there's more to these rings through these future movies.
So, do we want to talk about the end credit scene?
Well, Mashko makes a good point.
Let's talk about the end.
Everybody keeps talking about, what's his name? The Dweller in Darkness?
Yeah, which was completely changed from the comics.
I don't think that's truly the Dweller in Darkness. I just think that was something that they used for the movie. I just think that was a name. Like, this, that might be an example of them not...
It might be one of the bigger minions, but it's not...
Well, the Dweller in Darkness is a much larger villain than what we saw at the end of Shang-Chi, who has, you know, speaking lines and looks very different. Sometimes you see him and he's got like an elephant, like a blue octopus elephant face. Sometimes he's like this demonic creature. But he's like a hell lord kinda from I can't think of his name. Dormammu's from. So the Dark Dimension, you know how that's split up into a bunch of different territories, and that's where Mephisto has a spot, Nightmare has a spot, so on and so forth. He has a spot there as well. Gotcha. I don't really think that is who we saw. I just think that was an arbitrary dragon. I don't think that has connection to the Marvel comics. I just think they may have used the name because they knew that's a character we're never really going to see. Right. In the grand scheme of things, so they could use the name, but I don't know. People are trying to force this to have more meaning than it really does, and I just think it was the villain
just a character
of the movie.
To end it. Yeah,
right.
Is it safe to say that was the dragon, whatever we're calling it, is of alien nature or whatever?
Oh, like I think it's a demon.
Okay.
I think if they're going, especially with where we're going with the Darkhold and where we're going with Blade, and we're going into the Midnight Suns video game that's coming out, all of the darker side of Marvel is coming to the forefront right now. I get why you're saying alien, because a lot of people also think that the rings come from Galactus, which I think is not true.
Well, here's the thing on that. I don't want to jump into the end credits just yet, but we'll give a little teaser. At one point, there are people in a room looking at a hologram or something. And to me, it looked like it was like a ship. I don't know if maybe I was just seeing things or imagining things, but I thought they were showing like the inside of that mountainside that everything was in.
They do come from a ship. I mean, they're literally found in an alien ship for like the thing that Fing Fang Foom is, the big giant dragon creature. He's a shape-shifting alien, but he stays looking like a big dragon. And that's where those rings come from. Like it's funny. It's really like it's flip the Green Lantern story on its head, and that's the 10 rings. Because they're bad instead of good. But it's the same concept. Aliens crash, we find them, they give you immense powers. So they could be contacting Fin Fang Foom for all we know. But I don't think it's Galactus. And we'll talk about that in a second. But let's as you said, let's talk about the end of the movie. Shang-Chi now with the 10 rings, these new version of the 10 rings, is putting him on a power level that makes him an Avenger, because let's be honest, he's been an Avenger before. I'm not going to take that away from him. And obviously he was the Phoenix not too long ago. So there have been times where he's had powers. Jonathan Hickman's Avengers and New Avengers, he was able to replicate himself. So there was an army of Shang-Chi. So there have been times he's been granted powers, but he's never really had powers. Like fighting was his power. That was his thing. He just beat you up because he's that good. Now, could put him on a team with some people and do some damage. Like he's a no joke character now, and I kind of love it. They're doing to Shang-Chi what they did to Thor, because I could care less about Thor growing up, and here we are talking about Shang-Chi, and I'm excited because I could never care about Shang-Chi growing up.
When we go up against Shang-Chi in Fight Club, we're all dead.
Oh, dude, no way, no way. No way. I don't know how, especially if we only get MCU weapons. You know what? We got to wait for Eternals. We got to wait for Eternals to come out. And the reason why is, what did you want to talk about the end of this movie before? We're teetering on the on the end credit scene at this point.
It's like the overall battle. I mean, it
was outstanding. It's outstanding.
It was at that point, it took me out of the fight and everything. Like everybody's just immediately going to. They're all just going to turn around, and so they're fighting each other, and then all of a sudden, you know, we're just going to continue to fight this bigger, you know, badder power thing.
Well,
so, okay.
Reason. Let's all die, or
reel that,
we help
reel
each other.
That back in. Reel that back in. You show up to this magical island where demons are coming out at you, and none of your weapons work. Not a one, because remember, only the dragon scale weapons work. You're going to tell me you're going to keep fighting the dragon scale people who are the ones who are keeping you from dying?
I don't know.
Come on,
really?
Moshko, come on.
Really?
You're just trying to...
I'm throwing conversation out here. One thing I mean, it was... You could, You knew everything was on a damn green screen, number one. Like, there were no practical props.
There were no dragons, and there were no faceless eagle, pig,
look,
gun, big creatures. Where were they?
We didn't talk about Trevor.
God, hold on. All those mythical lions.
And,
where were they
Morris
in real life?
Phenomenal. But with the that fight, the dragons, everything, you're telling me, and I love this segue that I always use, you're telling me that one arrow from the person who never shot an arrow until that day took out that giant-ass dragon.
Oh, my God.
You know, I'm with you. You reminded me. That was the first thing I said when I left the theater. I was like, hold on. You're going to tell me all it took was one arrow to take this thing out?
All
and
the
you had
stuff they're throwing at that thing.
They literally could have just had everybody with arrows shoot at the door and a movie would have been over. Like, no one needed a staff or a sword.
Yeah,
you could have just...
You needed Shang-Chi to go Super Saiyan at the end.
Well, of course, you need a movie to happen, but it doesn't change the fact that logic is a little... like that. You're absolutely right.
It's a comic book movie. There is no logic.
I saw a better fight back in 84 with Falcor and Atreyu against that damn thing. If that damn dragon came through there...
How old were you then?
Over.
Like 30?
Hey,
still.
We used to watch that in grade school all the time.
I'm just saying that you're absolutely right. That was that might be that's up there with Death Dealer as a problem with the movie. That she hit that one that made no sense. That made no sense.
So I get the whole all you need is, because it went back to something else that was said earlier, like you or maybe I was just thinking in my head, you know, you never make the shot you don't take or something like that. But then also all it takes is one shot. And that's, you know,
she got lucky.
I think she took out like two things and then the giant ass world eater that was going to take out everybody.
Yeah, that I was amazed that one arrow, because there's no need for an army. You just need archers. If that gate ever opened and you had 30 archers all with those arrows, just nonstop firing arrows at that door, nothing would have survived. Mm-hmm. You would have killed everything coming out that door.
That was the one thing I was like, you know, they all lined up. They all took one shot and they all just kind of stood there like, Keep firing the arrows.
Well, to be fair, to Moscow's point, they were fighting some people behind them. To be fair, the other side hadn't flipped yet. It's not until Death Dealer died that the side that they flipped. Because remember, they were getting attacked on both fronts at that point. So I'll give them that.
They
what we just glossed over?
A bunch of things, but go ahead.
Wong and Abomination and the Black Widow trailer. Or the Black Widow, what's it called?
I thought
Black
we'd
Widow
do that.
And Black Widow and Iron Man 3. Cameo there.
There's a lot in this movie
but Wong wrote himself into the movie, essentially. Like, not he didn't personally write himself into the movie. He just tweeted, how am I not in this movie? And they figured out a way to work him in, and
it worked.
I was a little suspect of the fight with Abomination, because they were buddies and training together. That's what threw me off. Like, him showing up and fighting him, there's so many more. And I'm going to reel my thoughts back in for a second. I think that scene is to take place of Val showing up and recruiting him. Yes. I think that's to let you know that Abomination's still around, so Val can put him on the Thunderbolts / Dark Avengers team as the Hulk replacement.
And that will happen in She-Hulk.
Yes, I think he'll be a major villain in She-Hulk. But I don't see, why is Wong training him? Why do we want him to fight better?
Because they're a fight club. You don't talk about it.
Okay, they did. They did. Whoever, who is the comedian that answers the door for him with the pink hair? He had a lot to say.
John something or other.
He had a whole lot to say. Actually. All right, let's get into the post-credit scenes, because those are some big ones. First off, his sister taking over the Ten Rings, kind of par for the course. He has a somewhat sister in the comics who does the same exact thing, and
cool. Moving
got
on.
Got it. Moving on. The big one, though, with Professor Hulk not being Professor Hulk anymore.
I'm the other way around on this one, but go ahead.
What, you thought that was a bigger deal?
I want to see that friggin' show or movie or whatever.
You're going to.
I know. I can't wait.
It literally says they'll be back.
It's going to be amazing.
This is the way that Marvel works, is that the solo movies gives a tease for what the next solo movie is going to be, as well as the tease for what the broader story is. And the broader story is a bigger deal to me, because the where do the rings come from is an interesting question if they're going to change it. Mm-hmm. From what it is from the comics, the Fing Fam Foom creatures. I don't know what there's a race, the name for their race.
It starts with an M. I don't know the rest. But
regardless, I think it makes the most sense to tie it into Eternals and to say that celestial weaponry. I think they come from the Celestials, which is why they're older than anyone else can figure out. Why not only Banner doesn't know, but why Carol doesn't know, who's never seen them before, nor the hieroglyphics and stuff on them, which could tie back into when they first showed up on Earth for Apocalypse. Go ahead, Huey.
So, how many Eternals are there that will be in the movie?
Was seven?
I think it's seven. Yeah.
There's going to be 10.
Ten.
How many rings are there?
Oh, snap, baby. Huey, man, mic drop, Huey.
So that's why I'm excited, because it's going to, I think it's going to directly tie right into Eternals.
And it makes the most sense. If they waste Galactus on these rings, I'm going to be furious. If you just shoehorn Galactus in here, first off, why the rings are sending a beacon to someone is beyond me. But it makes sense if they're sending a beacon to the emergence that's happening in Eternals. Like, if that's the reason the beacons were set off, is a whole different story. Right? Mm-hmm. So maybe the fact that Wenwu was never able to unlock their actual powers, that it never really detected humanity to that degree, or life, because it needs to be a life-bearing planet. And it wasn't until Shang-Chi's balance that actually woke it up to send the message out to the Celestials to come back to Earth, which is why now the Eternals are getting involved. So you could see how that works, but it's way better than Galactus is something that's happening, and the Fantastic Four is a movie that's happening soon, so of course it's Fantastic Four related.
Now, like, it ultimately could be that as well, because, you know, they still say in the Eternals trailer that the snap released a bunch of energy. And then again, when Hulk snapped and when Tony snapped, released more energy. So that probably put Earth as a beacon. But now the literal beacon is going off into space and saying, hey, here's Earth. So all the space characters will be making their way towards Earth.
You're right. And we're also making an assumption that it's Shang-Chi that is the reason those went off. Because how many other things are taking place at the same exact time? I mean, theoretically...
We don't know where this fits in the continuity.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, we still know it's, 5 years... Well, it's after the blip, because there was a sign that said,
Well, they talked about it.
Like, if you needed help, and they said it in the beginning.
They literally talked about it in the beginning.
But when those rings switch over, could be the same exact moment that was synced up with Loki and Wanda.
Exactly. Yeah, I was just going to say
it could be WandaVision opening up the Darkhold. I mean, if they really want to connect it to, like, the dweller, what the hell's his name? The octopus dude.
Oh,
C'thone? It would be even crazier if it was C'thone, but it's not C'thone.
Wanda opens the Darkhold, right? Spider-Man messes up Doctor Strange's thing, and the ring switch all at the exact same moment.
I mean, crazier things have happened.
Right.
So I think a connection to the Eternals and the Celestials makes more sense, and in connecting it to the older side of the cosmic landscape of Marvel than trying to connect it into the occult, because those are the two things that are happening. It's like we've got the short-lived expansion of the Marvel cosmos, right? Which is then going to lead right in to the more mystical occult side of things with WandaVision and stuff like that. So I think we're seeing, I think those two things are happening simultaneously. And I think this connects with the cosmos and everything else connects to the occult. Because there's so much occult stuff happening right now that it makes no sense to not have more going towards, Captain Marvel 2 that's coming out.
Hopefully at the end of the year, Marvel releases a new timeline.
They do. They update the timeline on Disney Plus.
True, they do.
So this makes me excited for Eternals.
But it's gonna be a while before we get that song. That
was my biggest takeaway. Here's a character that, I didn't necessarily care about at all when it was announced. Same thing with Eternals, and seeing how well done that this film was, I'm excited to see Eternals. One thing I do want to say about that mid credit. Do you think it was too much? Do you think it was necessary after the after they went with Juan and I guess whomever to the Sanctum when they went in there? I thought it should have just ended right there. I don't think it was necessary to continue to move the story to then have it, seeing Banner and Captain Marvel and whoever else was in the room.
I mean, maybe not to see them, but to have the rings part of it to find there's a beacon, I think, was important because it, like I said, it's most likely going to tie into Eternals.
Right.
I think so. I think so because it's par for the course. I mean, we got Carol showing up in Infinity War for Endgame, or not? It wasn't Infinity War. It was her own movie. We had Tony and Banner in Iron Man 3. You know what I mean? Like
Oscar's having a meltdown. What?
Not a meltdown, but so in the Spider-Man trailer, when he opens up that portal, when Juan opens up the portal and says, "Don't do that spell," and then walks in. Where was he going?
So people have already made the assumption. They said he's not.
He's got a winter jacket and stuff on, man. We would have seen him coming out with bags.
Which is still
and
bizarre.
Gear.
Like, why is that? That's not strange. Anyway. Well, it's strange, but it's not Doctor Strange.
It's a possibility, but everyone keeps saying that this is like Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum is a crazy place. There was one time they opened the refrigerator and like tentacles started attacking people. Like,
that's not normal.
This is what Doctor Strange, like his house being covered in snow is not that crazy. And him being arrogant is not crazy. Everybody keeps saying that this is definitely not Doctor Strange. I don't think that's true. I think that's a possibility. Sure. 100% it's a possibility. But to say that there's no way that that's Doctor Strange is also weird because he is an arrogant character who's always been an arrogant character. It's a cornerstone of who he is. And the Sanctum Sanctorum is full of madness. It's crazy constantly, always.
I mean, we did find out how arrogant he is in What If.
Right? So I'm just saying, he's not, it's, everyone keeps going, well, he would have learned. No, he wouldn't have. He would assume he knows everything. That's kind of his deal. It's the mistake he makes all the time. It's the reason that Fashanti took away a lot of his powers.
Sorry, I was thinking Ashanti, not Vishanti.
Definitely not.
Right.
All right, I should probably do that thing.
You should.
Go see the movie. Put it this way. If you haven't seen it and you're okay with spoilers and you're listening this long, it's definitely worth your time.
Hold on. It carries on the tradition of the summer movies right now being all about family.
You just had to figure out how to work a Fast and the Furious reference in here somewhere.
Of course he did.
I mean, it's easy. The MCU continues to really model itself after the Fast and Furious franchise.
Is that your name, Captain Toretto? Is that where we go with this?
Don't make his ego get any bigger. It's going to get like Maurer size soon.
You can find the show Welcome to Fireside everywhere online. It's at Welcome to Fireside or your social media choice, unless it's Twitter, which is Fireside Crew, or YouTube, which is also Welcome to Fireside. Go to Moshko Collects, buy some stuff, follow him, support the show in that way because, you know, that's where we get all of our fun stuff. So, like, you know, help the man. And then, you know, Baby Huey's over there doing wonderful things. He's looking good. Svelte over there, might I say, Mr. Huey. And Bauer will be around sometime. Once again, I'm Mint.
Moshko, stay tuned for our next episode. Or welcome to this episode from our last episode. Or
we don't know how this fits in yet. It's probably Thursday. This might be Wednesday. Hell, it might be Friday. I don't know. But
just listen to the last show and listen to the next show. That's it. Mm-hmm. I'm Huey. Goodbye.
That was good. That was good.
Deuces.
Peace.
Excelsior.
All right. Goodbye. This is done.